All right, what's good, everybody? Welcome back to Macabre America. I'm Hale, and you're listening to episode 4, week 4 of my podcast. I'm super excited for this week's episode because I'm doing something a little bit special, and that is because I'm recording from Florida, actually. I've got my podcast contraption set up in this bunk bed that is currently my bedroom for the week. I actually had to like tie the microphone to the top of this bunk bed so it doesn't move when I talk. It's super ghetto, but we're gonna make it work. So if this podcast sounds a little different than my other ones, that's why. The other special thing about this episode is I decided to pick a story that relates to where I'm vacationing. So I'm in Florida. As I said, we're in Navarre Beach for the week. This week, I'm going to do an episode on a Florida killer. I wanted to do research, something that was near and dear to where we'd be staying, just to like creep myself out even further. So today, we will be diving into a Florida serial killer. Trigger warnings for today is that it is a true crime story and involves a serial killer, and the story does involve rape. So if that's something that you might not want to listen to, you might just want to skip through this episode. And I know I talk about a lot of crazy people in my episodes, but this guy is like extra whack, so just prepare yourselves. The last bit of news I wanted to share is that I just checked my Anchor account. And as of 2/21, so as of yesterday, I've had 150 listens to my podcast, which is awesome. Thank you to everybody who has been listening. It's been super fun. I'm definitely not making this podcast to get listenership or to get a certain amount of views. I'm literally just doing this for fun because I like to read and learn about creepy stuff. So just thank you everybody who has been listening and paying attention thus far. And if it's your first episode, welcome. Can't wait to start getting into some creepy stuff with you. I think that's about all I need to cover for this week, so let's get spooky. You're listening to Macabre America, and this is the story of the Gainesville Ripper. Okay, so as I said, we are going to be focusing on the Gainesville Ripper for this week's episode. Obviously, located in Gainesville, Florida. For those of you who don't know where that is, it's north part of Florida, a little bit south of Jacksonville. And it's about a 4 hour and 45 minute drive to get to Gainesville from Navarre, which is where I'm staying for the week. Definitely don't plan on driving to Gainesville this week, but just to give a little bit of reference as to where that's at. The main character of this horrific true story is Danny Rolling. Rolling was born on May 26, 1954, in Shreveport or Shreveport. I have no idea how to say it. I'm just going to go with maybe Shreveport for the rest of the episode. If I'm pronouncing it wrong, I'm so sorry. Shreveport, Louisiana. He was born to his mother, Claudia, and his police officer father, James Rolling was his name. His father, James, told Danny that he was unwanted since the day that he was born, and James continuously abused Danny's mother and brother, Kevin. And I'm assuming he also abused Danny. It just was not a great growing up experience for them. I can imagine that if your father told you from day one that you were unwanted, that was probably a super pleasant childhood. But James's abuse doesn't end there. Apparently, one time, Claudia went to the hospital claiming James tried to make her cut herself with a razor blade. And James was also a strong disciplinarian. In one example, it was said that he was embarrassed by Danny's actions, which I'm not sure what these actions were. I wasn't able to find them. But he was so embarrassed that he pinned Danny to the ground, handcuffed him, and then had the police take him away. So I have no idea what happened here. I'm guessing that it had to be somewhat substantial for the fact that the police actually did take Danny away. So you can't just call the police and be like, hey, dude, my son's embarrassing me. Can you take him out of here? At least I don't think so. That doesn't seem right. I don't know. But anyways, obviously this dude was super strict and pretty scary. Also, just as a little side note, I'm going to post a picture of Danny Rowling's mugshot to my Instagram and brand new Facebook accounts this week so you guys can see what he looks like. And he just looks like a sad dude. I'm definitely not trying to give him any sort of credit here. It just, he was born with a sad face, and you'll know exactly what I'm saying when you look at him. But if I had a dad that told me I was unwanted since birth, I too would have a sad face. Also, I'm so sorry if you hear dogs barking in the background. I've got my own dog, Decker. Luckily, he's in here just napping. But we've also got my parents' dog, Maggie, and she sometimes likes to bark, and so I just heard her bark downstairs. So I apologize if you hear anything throughout the episode that might not have typically been there during one of my normal episodes. Anyways, as Danny got older, he was arrested on several occasions, some for robberies, and on one occasion, he was actually caught in Georgia spying on a woman while she was getting dressed. So he's a pervert. However, he was also trying to fit into everyday society as a well-behaved citizen, and at one point in time, he worked as a waiter at Poncho's restaurant in Shreveport. For those of you who don't know what Poncho's is, because I had no idea what that is, it's a chain Tex-Mex restaurant that can be found around the United States. Within Poncho's, their main product is an all-you-can-eat buffet, along with items that can be ordered to serve. But unfortunately, it doesn't look like the Shreveport Poncho's is open any longer. And based on the research that I did, many of the Poncho's restaurants have actually since closed, so you probably won't find too many around the United States today anyway. The first of Rowling's particularly brutal crimes took place on November 4th in 1989 in Shreveport, Louisiana, so still in his hometown. These murders actually remained unsolved until the end of Danny Rowling's prison sentence, in which he finally confessed. And when I say the end of his prison sentence, literally the very, very, very end, he was like, oh yeah, I did these two. The murders in question were those of a 55-year-old named William Grissom, his daughter Julie, who was 24 years old, and his 8-year-old grandson Sean. They were preparing dinner when they were attacked. After each person was murdered, only Julie's body was mutilated, cleaned, and then posed. So again, those murders went unsolved all the way until the very end of Danny's trial. But this next crime that he committed did not go unsolved. In May of 1990, Danny apparently decided that he had enough of his father's bullshit and attempted to kill him during one of their many arguments. James Rowling, his father, survived, but in the attack ended up losing an eye and an ear. By August of 1990, Danny was extremely unwell. This was when his serial killings began in what authorities would later call a burglary and robbing spree. But it wasn't just burglaries and robberies that he was committing. This is when things start to get real crazy and real dark super fast, so buckle in. It was early on Friday, August 24th, that Rowling broke into an apartment that was shared by University of Florida students Christina Powell and 17-year-old freshman Sonia Larson. When he walked inside, he immediately spotted Christina asleep on the couch. He stood over her briefly and decided to keep exploring the apartment, leaving Christina where she lay. He walked upstairs where he found Sonia Larson asleep in her bed. Rowling taped her mouth shut to hide her screams and proceeded to stab her to death. Sonia Larson died trying to fight off her attacker. But Rowling was still not satisfied. He went back downstairs, taped Christina's mouth closed, bound her wrists, and proceeded to rape her while threatening her with a knife. After the attack, he forced her face down on the floor and stabbed her in the back 5 times. He took the time to position both bodies in sexually provocative positions before taking a shower on the premises and then leaving. It only took one day before Rowling made his next attack. It was Saturday, August 25th, and he broke into another apartment, this one of 18-year-old Christina Hoyt. He discovered she wasn't home, so he laid in wait until she returned at 11 a.m. Immediately, he surprised Hoyt from behind and put her in a chokehold, subduing her in order to tape her mouth shut and bind her wrists so she could not scream or attempt to fight back. He led Hoyt to a bedroom where he cut her clothes off and raped her. Similar to Christina Powell's murder, he forced Hoyt onto her stomach before stabbing her in the back. One of the stab wounds actually ruptured her heart, but he was still not done. In this gruesome murder, Rowling took the time to dismember Hoyt. He placed her head on a shelf facing the rest of the corpse to surprise whoever found her. The next attack by Danny Rowling would take place on Monday, August 27th. He broke into the apartment of two more University of Florida students, Tracy Pauls, age 23, and her roommate, Manny Tabota, also 23 years old. Tabota was the first one that Rowling found asleep in one of the bedrooms. A fight ensued between the two of them, but eventually Rowling ended up killing Tabota. Pauls was awoken by the struggle in the other room where she saw Rowling. She ran back into her bedroom and tried to barricade her door, but Rowling was able to break through. He then taped her mouth, bound her wrists, cut off her clothing, and raped her before flipping her body over and stabbing her three separate times in the back. He posed Tracy Paul's body before leaving the crime scene, but left Manny in the position in which he was murdered. Right after their murder, the Miami Herald published a story on the murders of Tracy and Manny. University of Florida President John Lombardi made a statement saying, quote, "It's clear this part of the country has some maniac on the loose," end quote. Gainesville Police Chief Waylon Clifton noted that they believed all five of the university murders were connected to the same killer. Now, as a side note, this may seem pretty obvious considering the fact that each crime scene was very similar to one another, but some of these murders don't always end up this way, or these investigations, I guess. Police officers don't always connect the dots. So the fact that the police chief in Gainesville noted this was really a massive win for authorities when it came to capturing the killer. Throughout all of this, the murder spree was obviously gaining widespread attention, especially throughout Florida. Many students in the Gainesville area were taking extra precautions to ensure they stayed safe. Some even transferred to other schools or withdrew their enrollment from the university in fear of the Ripper, which, if everybody remembers, these murders were happening towards the end of August, which is right around the time that the fall semester begins. So some students just said, "Hey, you know, I'm outie. I'm not dealing with any of this." But obviously, not all students decided to leave. Others braved through the terror by changing their daily routines and sleeping together in groups. One student even made a statement to the newspaper stating, quote, "We slept with steak knives last night. I need to call my mom. This is unreal," end quote. Finally, on September 7th, 1990, Rowling was apprehended by authorities on a burglary charge. According to the Miami Herald, Rowling was, quote, "soft-spoken and polite," end quote, and made no effort to grab his loaded gun when police stopped him. He then immediately confessed to the robbery. After being arrested for the burglary, police discovered the tools Rowling had matched marks connected to those left at the Gainesville murder scenes. Upon searching his, quote, "small one-man camp," end quote, in a wooded area located near apartment complexes that university students regularly frequented, authorities also discovered audio tapes that Danny Rowling had made that alluded to the crimes he committed. I kind of laughed when I said one man camp because I found a photo online of what this one man camp looked like, and it's literally like a sheet tent that must have just had audio tapes in it. Like, this guy was just living in the woods in a tent. In November of 1990, he was finally charged with several counts of murder. He was brought in front of an attorney 4 years later, claiming he committed the murders because he wanted to be like Ted Bundy, who he referred to as a, quote, "superstar." It's also noted that during Rowling's trial, Court TV interviewed Rowling's mother in relation to the case, and during the interview, you could hear the father, James, shouting off camera. So even though James had lost an ear and an eye at this point, he was still on his bullshit. The main evidence connecting Danny back to the murders, aside from the tools that he used, was DNA evidence and statements that he made when he was in jail. His case cost a whopping $6.3 million for the investigation and trial, and 148 witnesses were called to testify. Danny Boy was sentenced to death on April 20, 1994. Over time, he had been diagnosed with antisocial personality disorder, borderline personality disorder, and paraphilia. If any of you are like me, you know 0% of what any of those things mean. So, let's go through some definitions together. Antisocial personality disorder, as defined by Mayo Clinic, is, quote, a mental disorder in which a person consistently shows no regard for right and wrong and ignores the rights and feelings of others. People with antisocial personality disorder tend to antagonize, manipulate, or treat others harshly or with callous indifference. They show no guilt or remorse for their behavior, end quote. Borderline personality disorder, as defined by the National Institute of Mental Health, is, quote, an illness marked by an ongoing pattern of varying moods, self-image, and behavior. These symptoms often result in impulsive actions and problems in relationships. People with borderline personality disorder may experience intense episodes of anger, depression, and anxiety that can last from a few hours to days. And lastly, paraphilia, as defined by Merck Manuals, which is definitely not the same kind of reference as Mayo Clinic or National Institute of Mental Health, but it was the first definition that came up when I searched it online, is, quote, frequent, intense, sexually arousing fantasies of behaviors that involve inanimate objects, children, or non-consenting adults, or suffering or humiliation of oneself or the partner. End quote. On October 25, 2006, Danny Rowling finally faced the music. He ate lobster tail as his last meal. And yes, I was personally sad that his last meal was not ponchos. And he was strapped to the gurney to face his imminent death. While he was strapped down, he made eye contact with the mother of one of his five university victims and sang songs in reference to angels, mountains, and St. Paul. Some of the lyrics he sang were, he who flung the stars into the heavens above, created the oceans, mountains, the eagle, the dove. None greater than thee, O Lord, none greater than thee. He who formed me out of the dust of the earth, he who breathed into my heart for all that it's worth, which is nothing. None greater than thee, O Lord, none greater than thee. Not once did he mention any sadness or regret towards the deeds that he had done and the lives that were lost. Danny never asked for forgiveness. He was executed in Rayford, Florida, at the age of 56. May he rest in pieces. August of 2020 marked the 30th anniversary of his horrific crime spree against the five innocent college and university students in Gainesville. A mural slash memorial was painted in memory of the victims and can still be found on the 34th Street Wall in Gainesville, Florida. Many books and films have been made to tell the story of Danny Rowling and his victims. One of the more famous works was the slasher film Scream that was released in 1996. The movie was actually inspired by Danny's crime spree. And between you and me, there's no reason for him to be proud of that because Scream is a terrible movie. Terrible. The Miami Herald stated, quote, the Gainesville Ripper case is one of Florida's most intense manhunts in memory, with more than 80 investigators working the case, including state investigators and FBI agents. Among the state investigators, 16 of them were skilled in psychological profiles, even including some that worked on the Ted Bundy killings a decade earlier at Florida State University. One thing is certain. Danny Rowling may have not been as prolific as Ted Bundy, but he was just as depraved. Okay, so thanks for sitting through that one with me. That was the case of Danny Rowling, aka the Gainesville Ripper. My moral of the story for this week is to make sure you always lock your home or apartment and maybe, just maybe, even sleep with a steak knife. As another side note, some of the victims within this crime spree actually did have their apartments locked. Maybe most definitely sleep with a steak knife. I'm going to be posting photos that go along with this story to my Instagram, so make sure you follow me at Macabre America Podcast. I'll also be posting the same photos to my new Facebook account, so make sure you follow or like me on Facebook. It's at Macabre America Podcast. If you have questions, concerns, comments, or maybe you just want to say hi, send me an email at macabreamericapodcast@gmail.com. Sources this week were Wikipedia, biography.com, and the Miami Herald, and music, as always, is from premiumbeat.com. And in case you didn't hear or didn't know, my podcast is finally on Apple Podcasts. It's taken a while to get there. So if you listen via Apple Podcasts, you can follow me now. Another great thing about Apple Podcasts is you can leave reviews, you can leave 5-star ratings. So please leave a comment or a review. So stay safe and stay listening, my beautiful people. I'll see you next week for the next episode of Macabre America.